Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
I am designer Dave Say.
Welcome on this lovely Monday, July 21st.
It is a lovely day.
2014. It's nice outside. It's not hot and muggy and gross and hot.
Yeah, it's been nice the past few days.
Yes.
Good weekend.
Yes. Yeah, it was a good weekend. Very good weekend. I think last weekend was a good weekend too, wasn't it? No. Yes.
Was it? I don't remember that.
I don't remember. Back. Midweek, it's been really gross.
Yeah.
There's been a few days here where it's almost reached 100 in the studio.
When was the last time we had one of these podcasts?
2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago?
Is it 2 weeks? Let me double check.
It's the 7th, I think?
Yes, the 7th.
So it's been 2 weeks have elapsed since our last podcast.
And what was it? I think I had some air conditioning problems at the apartment. That was why this Monday didn't work.
Right, the previous Monday. The Monday before that, I think you were on vacation? Or you were you Brimfield, or was that the...
No, that was Thursday and Friday of the following, of
it was
the
like
previous
Sarah,
week.
Was it your anniversary? Or was it Sarah's birthday?
I don't remember. That's a good question.
I don't remember. You know, we probably talked about it at some point. So how was your weekend?
This weekend was good. We have to catch up a little bit because we did... I had said we were going to go to that Brimfield antique thing, so we went.
Right. What was the Brimfield thing again?
So it's the Brimfield Antique Flea Market, and oh my God, people, holy huge! Like I was raised on flea markets.
Yep.
I have never, ever, ever, ever been to anything.
How big was it? Was it like Disneyland?
It was hugemongous. Like we took 2 days.
Yeah.
And the thing was the July one, so it was. It wasn't even as massly populated as it probably will be in September when it's cooler.
Ah.
So we got there at 10 a.m. and we walked, because I had my little Fitbit on, we walked 7.5 miles the first day. Right. And at 5 o'clock, we just barely finished the first side.
How many? The first side of a
The first side
square?
Of the, it just goes down this road and it's just all these like... It's like in a big field.
One side of the road, or
well, the flea market's on both sides.
Yeah.
So, and it goes. I don't have the.
So you just walk straight down it, and everything's kind of in a row.
It's like
rows of.
It's done in this area that has just giant fields. So everybody's setting up in these fields. So there's you know like columns and patterns and rows and rows and rows and rows that you go.
So
and
the road divides it in half.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did 7.5 miles the first day, and at 5 p.m. when everybody was starting to shut down, we just finished the first side. It was, oh my gosh.
So you walked for 7 miles all day.
7.5 miles.
Looking at
people's
hundreds and hundreds
stuff.
Of... Wow.
And then the second day we got there at 10 a.m. We stayed at a motor lodge overnight, and we got there at 10 a.m. And the second side wasn't as populated, and we finished that side around... 3 o'clock, and we did 5.5 miles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Still.
It's so huge, but it's mainly just antique things.
Oh, yeah?
So it's not like, you know, dudes with boxes of movies and, like, the stuff that we go home for. But we did come home with, like a box full of little stuff. I found a fantastic Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom patch.
Nice.
Which I've decided this camera bag here is going to become my patch bag from now on. Every time I see patches, I'm just going to get it and sew the patch on.
Yeah.
Sarah bought some really cool things. The find for us, for her especially, was since I've known her, she's had this like retro 60s Samsonite suitcase. And it's like this deckled blue kind of color. And we actually found the matching, like the little beauty case where you can like, where you put all the beauty products. Like, so we found that. So that was really exciting. So now she has a matching set of like beauty case and suitcase.
Uh-huh.
And she said that there's also a larger suitcase that's part of that set. So that's our next thing to keep our eye out for, so that eventually we'll all have a matching set and we can get rid of what we've been using currently.
Uh-huh.
And then just lots of other little tiny things. It was funny, the guy that I bought the patch from, Sarah, I think Sarah had said, I was like, oh, look at this patch. Should I get it? And Sarah was like, do you have any other Indiana Jones things? And the guy said, as a matter of fact, he's like, I think I have a Temple of Doom movie poster. And I was like, all right. So he goes in the back of this big truck and he comes out and he has a Raiders of the Lost Ark, like one sheet from like 1981.
Oh my God.
It was really amazing.
And how much did he want for
it? He was like, I got 95 on it. He's like, I'd take 65.
Yep.
And, he went, and I was having a really hard time. I was like, I just don't have the cash. But Sarah just starts laughing. She brings it out. Like she just starts laughing.
Yeah.
And she's looking at me. She knows. She's just like, oh, you poor, poor man. And I was like, oh my God, Raiders theatrical release. Like just amazing.
Yeah.
So for the next like hour, that was like I just as I'm walking, I'm like I can't believe I just walked away from this. But like, what am I going to do with a Raiders post? Like, I don't even have.
That's true. There's no room. So many cool things that you can have.
There is.
There's no space for them.
There is. And the other thing that I saw that I almost bought was I found somebody was selling an old brass Petzval lens.
Oh yeah.
For large format cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to do is I have a 4x5 field camera up here, and I would like to see if I can find a lens that would work for it. So I almost got it, but then I emailed somebody that has a bunch of these lenses, and they said, the camera you have to sort of move the bellows out so long in order to use a lens that long.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And the bellows on it will just, it won't go that long, so I wouldn't be able to. So I now know what I'm looking for, which is a smaller.
Is it possible to build a custom box? Like, I know your dad's pretty handy with stuff like that.
It's like a box.
Right?
It's like two planks and a big bellows in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay. Eventually, but if I can find something that fits on what we have that's existing,
yeah,
that'd be kind of nice.
That's true. Yeah.
It's just sort of passively. I'm just sort of started looking.
Yeah. It's the flea market thing is partly an exploration.
It is.
You're looking for ideas. You're looking for components.
But I'd never seen as much. I mean, there's a lot of nice stuff, a lot of expensive stuff. Some guy had a it was a movie theater prop for one of the prequel Star Wars movies, and it was a giant fiberglass Yoda.
Ugh.
And he was like, he's like this, and he's got his lightsaber on, and it was really nice. It was a prop? It was like something that when you walk in the theater, they would have it just sort of in the lobby. It was a 3D Yoda. And it looked like it was like full size, like it was like a to scale Yoda thing.
Right.
And it was really amazing.
Oh.
And he was like, nah, he's like, this isn't really for sale. He's like, I just use this to bring people into our tent. Nice. Like, Joe,
why did you bring it here?
Exactly. People like to do that. I was at the Hall Flea Market like last month, and there was this woman that had this really weird stuffed fox head thing.
Yeah.
But it had like the body of a baby. Like it looked like a baby standing, but it was all fox. And then the head was sort of positioned like a human head. And it was really fascinating. And I was like, I have to ask this lady how much. And she said the same thing. She was like, oh, this isn't for sale. This is just, I just put it on top of my car to bring people over here to.
Yeah, okay.
So like, false advertising.
I guess it's all right. But if you're going to do something like that, you need to name your stall something to do with the thing you're using to draw people in.
Right, exactly.
Like Yoda's.
Exactly.
The stuffed fox.
Crazy. So that was, the Brimfield was amazing. We're actually thinking of going again in September, and we're probably going to see if you were interested in going.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
And maybe we can get our friends Jen and David to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could just like get a place through Airbnb or something and just go down there for like 3 or 4 days.
That's an interesting idea.
So that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. I like the idea of that.
So that was the previous weekend. And then that weekend, well, it was Thursday and Friday, and then that weekend we just stayed home because I was so sick of walking, because we just walked so much, and I was so sick of, I was like, I don't even want to go to a flea market this weekend, I just want to stay home and sleep and stuff. And
everything would just seem pale by comparison.
It would, I know, I was like, it's going to be like, what, Hollis, we're done already? Like, it's done, like, we already walked the whole thing?
Yeah. I used to get like that when I would go to Asia. And then like, you see all the electronic stuff, and they come back here and like says, "What is this junk?"
Well, it's nothing.
It's like, this is, you know, everything over there is like, you know, 10 years in advance of what we'll see here. So
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. So then this weekend was our yearly trek to Pitcher Mountain and Stoddard to pick blueberries.
Pitcher Mountain.
Pitcher Mountain.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Usually when we go, we hike it. And it's a really, it's like a 10-minute, it's not even a 10-minute hike. It's a really short hike to the very top.
Yeah.
But this year, somebody said there's a path that you can drive a car into, and they said you should go do that.
Huh.
And it actually took us to this giant area.
Yeah.
And it's like donation. You just leave a donation for however much. You know, it's like request a donation is $1 a quart.
Oh, wow.
And so I think we left with like 5 pounds of blueberries.
Yeah.
And so we'll probably turn that into whatever. We still have blueberries syrup from last year. We made syrup so that I can mix it with my milk. So we'll probably
make some more of that. I would like to place an order now if you have any for sale.
And then, so that was really cool. And then yesterday, Sunday, there was a Southern New Hampshire photography meetup at Beaverbrook Association, which is where Sarah and I got married.
Nice.
And it was good. It's just I wanted to go just because I wanted to meet some new faces that, you know, members of the community I haven't met. And just sort of stand back and just, you know, just watch how other people work and see how they interact with clients and or with models and stuff. So it was good. It was such a beautiful day. You know, at first I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go. And Sarah was like, just go outside and play in the outside. She's like, go be among your peers.
Mm-hmm. Hiding the giant book behind her back.
Exactly. Exactly. We went we saw Ian Ethan in concert at Amiskeg Studio. And Matthew Lamano, who owns Amiskeg Studio, his daughter Cecilia, Sarah walks in and she had her, because she goes everywhere with her book, because you never know when she's going to have some downtime so that she can just sit and read.
Yeah.
So she walked in with her Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix book, because July is Harry Potter month and she's trying to burn through all the Harry Potter books.
That's amazing.
In July.
I like that.
Yes. So she walked in and immediately she was just like, she's like, your daughter is reading Harry Potter. And it turned out they were reading the exact same book. So so we took a little picture of the two girls holding their books in front of their faces.
That's adorable.
It was pretty cute.
I'm trying to stand up here.
What are you doing?
I'm standing up. Why? Seeing if this actually works. Well, because like this chair is kind of low.
Oh.
And my back hurts sitting in
it. Oh.
Back. Does my voice sound deeper? More resonant?
More hollow?
More hollow. More sepulchral?
Yes. So what have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Well, now I can't see my screen, so I don't know what I've been doing. Let me bend over here.
You've been playing a lot of WildStar.
I've been playing a lot of WildStar, but I haven't been playing WildStar at the same time. So, okay, WildStar.
Expand that.
And WildStar is this online, massively multiplayer online role-playing game, or MMORPG. Like, you've heard of World of Warcraft, probably. It's a game like that. It's actually founded, the studio that makes this was actually founded by a bunch of ex-World of Warcraft people.
Oh, really?
Who wanted to make the game that they wanted to make, because like World of Warcraft hadn't come out exactly the way that, you know, some of these people had wanted. So over the next 7 years, they made, you know, a bunch of iterations, and they just launched their game after a couple of years of final IP development, you know, like the characters, the settings, you know, so it's an original IP. It's like... their own world. It's not based on anything else that came before. Okay. So, you know, people are unfamiliar with it. And so because of that, and because of a lot of the characterization and style they put into this, it's a very role-play friendly game. And usually when you are talking about a computer role-playing game, you're talking about, you know, again, like Mass Effect or something like that. So you're controlling this character on the screen. You're leveling up by doing stuff, usually shooting other things. Every time you shoot a monster or a bad guy, you get something called experience points. When you collect enough experience points, you go up a level, which makes you a little bit stronger, a little bit faster. You can get better weapons. You can get better armor. And you know, that's the basic grind, the level grind.
Yep.
And then the difference with that and a game like Mass Effect, which is, I believe, a single-player game, a massively multiplayer online game has, like, you know, many thousands of people playing in the same environment as you are. So you can actually see them around running in the world doing things. You can group up with them and you can, like, take down objectives with each other while you're doing this whole level grind.
Yep.
Now, the RP I'm talking about is actually more like acting and improv.
So, this is interesting.
Yeah, this is really fascinating because I had observed this community for a while in other games, but had never participated because I didn't know what they were doing. but I like the idea of making characters look cool and like thinking up like funny backstories. Like I do those with people's groceries at the supermarket. So I'll be standing in line and they'll look at the person in front of me and I'll see like a carrot, organic. I'll see a bunch of juice, and then I'll see maybe like, you know, some hamburger that's like 80%, which doesn't fit.
Right.
Like, I'm wondering, like, that person is buying stuff for herself, but she has someone in her life that eats the bad stuff. I wonder how that goes. And then I'll look at the person and say, like, they seem happy or they seem really kind of mad. Or, you know, so, like, you know, just by looking at the items, you can kind of draw a story together. That's like kind of how my mind works. So like, and I've been watching the role players, and they have their own channel usually, which is a fun channel to hang out in. And by channel, I mean, like, it's a text chat. So people are typing in text as...
Like a chat room?
Yeah, a chat room, basically. Okay. So, and they're talking back and forth in the, quote, out of character or OOC room.
Okay.
So they're not actually talking as, like, their characters in the games, but they're just kind of talking as players of the game.
Okay.
So they can talk about anything, and it's not... is distinct from being in character or IC, in which like anything you type in is supposed to be coming out of the mouth or is an action being performed by the character. So imagine your character in the game is kind of like a puppet, and they have the puppet world, and then there's like the player world. So there's these two distinct worlds that are going on there. But the RPers also tend to be really super into anime and games and science fiction and fantasy. So they're fun to watch, as opposed to the general chat, which tends to be also gamers, but it's a little bit more people yelling at each other. So I tend to play on the RP designated servers, which are separated from everyone else, because otherwise the RPers will get bullied mercilessly by all the player killers that are out there. So anyway, long story short, so I've spent this past weekend actually trying a bunch of stuff that I ordinarily wouldn't do in person, like go to a bar. I hate going to bars. but there's an aspect of this. So when you have a bunch of people who are playing characters, characters need something to do. And what do? They need to interact with other characters.
Yep.
So this has actually turned out to be a really good simulation of learning how to do small talk. So you go into a place and you don't know anyone. What do you do to communicate with each other? And you may know the players from the out-of-character chat, but in character. So you have to think, okay, so this character doesn't know the other character. How do you break the ice?
Right.
You know? And then, so I've been watching this, and like I met a few people who were explaining this to me, how this worked. And it turns out that a lot of the things that you do in that are things you do in the real world, too. You walk into and it's affected the way I've been dealing with people, because, I've been doing it for a little bit while, but this last weekend, I hadn't been playing the game all week, or for a good chunk of the week, because I realized I was just taking a lot of time.
It's a time suck.
It's a big time suck. Because you're there and you're thinking of things to say constantly, so you keep the chat moving, or you keep the collective storytelling moving.
Yep.
You know, like there's no dead air. I don't want dead air.
Right.
I want things to happen. And so you have to think about all these things, like, well, who is your character? How are you going to project your character's personality such as you are discovering at the same time?
Yep.
In such a way that it provides an opportunity for other characters to interact in kind. I mean, there's one thing you could just say, like, I'm a character, I'm so cool. People look how cool at me, but that gives people nothing to interact with. Maybe to mock you or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's like if you're at a good host at a kid's birthday party or something like that. I mean, you give the kids something to do, and you give them some things to share, and you have things to look at, and then along that, you can kind of weave this experience together, and that's when it really gets really interesting. So that's taken a lot of my time. I've written up a couple really long articles on my blog about it. It goes into way more detail than most people probably want to know. Probably the geekiest thing that I've written about in quite some time. But yeah, I've been noticing that when I'm out and about, my mind has now kind of has this extra little gear in it that can talk to people about stuff.
The small talk gear.
Yeah, the small talk gear. And it really is kind of just expressing an interest in something. That was the easiest icebreaker that I discovered. Just saying, that's a cool t-shirt. That's enough. People get going on it. Or just smiling at someone. These are because I have had to emote these things. Just if there's nothing happening, at least you can say you had to signal that you're friendly.
Yep.
So you emote, and an emote is like you type in what your character is doing. Like, my character smiles. My character frowns. My character picks up a cookie and looks at it suspiciously. Stuff like that. And, that gives other people an idea about, what mood you're in, maybe what you're interested in, and it creates an opening. And you smile at that person, they may feel like talking to you.
Huh.
So that's been interesting. We'll see how this goes.
That's interesting. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it actually has given me enough courage to go to the piano karaoke things. Yeah. So I went last, it's the first Wednesdays of the month, and Elise McDonald's runs this. And I was there, and I was just kind of struck by how everyone loved music.
Hmm.
And I don't have that relationship with music. Did we talk about this last week? I can't remember.
Talked about it on the last time we were at your house, though.
Oh, right. Yeah, they all these talks blur together.
All the same.
So I'd been there a couple times before. I sang once, but mostly I've been listening and just kind of vibing. And when I was there last time, I decided to keep notes on it because those Elise does a lot of she plays the piano live. She she improvs the piano based on the key you can sing in. So like if you can't really hit the high note of the original song, she can transpose it on the fly.
She can drop it down. That's great.
So it's really cool. And then also, since she knows a lot about music, after every song she has some kind of comment about it. Like, oh, this was a big in the 70s. Patti Smith sang this. I saw her in Central Park. Like, she's like this punk rocker, comes from this punk, but her new crowd is kind of more mellow when they were sitting on the grass. And she saw that and she wasn't going to have anything. So she said something and pissed people off. I can't repeat the actual language that she used, but it was something like this. And then, you know, so I was running down all this color commentary because I was thinking, you know, it might be interesting to try to develop a relationship with music that I haven't had before. Like, mm-hmm. the people there, you know, they love the music, they love the songs, and it's not so much of a scene where it's about performing to be seen or to dare to do something.
Yep.
It's really more like almost like a friendly kind of workshop, or it's the crowd, the regular crowd that's there. They're there because they love the songs, and they're in a supportive environment where they can express that love.
Yep.
In a way that, and you know, not worry, you know, like you how it sounds or messing up. That was the only thing that really impressed me at first, because people would go up there and they wouldn't know the song, and they would just laugh through all the entire everything they blew. So it's like they knew they blew it, and they knew they did a bad job, and at least screwed up one transition, and the other person forgot the words, and the lyric sheet from the internet like made no sense. And but they got through it, and they'll sing it again in the future, and it'll be a little bit better. In fact, there was a couple of people, Steven and Alex. They performed this song they'd been working on. Like, you know, Alex was on the piano, Steve was singing.
Yep.
And apparently they had performed this once before in this venue, like a while ago. I hadn't seen it.
Yep.
But there was a massive improvement, and it was like really, really good. It was Gethsemane from Jesus Christ Superstar. And Elise had seen the previous one, and she was like really, you could tell that she was really proud that they had come so far.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were students of hers at one point.
They must have been.
But, you know, afterwards everyone applauded. It was like five or six people there. You know, so, you know, small but, you know, enthusiastic turnout. And they gave them their dues, and it was a good moment. So I decided that, like, I was going to try to learn how to sing this stuff, and I wasn't going to care about it because I'm going to be in an experimental mood. And there's one thing that I've really learned about or accepted about myself this year, which was, you know, like, I'm not naturally an outgoing, explorative person.
Yeah.
You know, like, as, you know, some people might think I am based on the stuff I write about, but I really don't like doing it. It's inconvenient. I tend to be the kind of person who likes to hang back and observe first before deciding something. I like to know, be certain about certain things.
Right.
But if there is an experiment that will give me some data that I didn't have before, and there's no other way of doing it, I will be the explorer. So in this case, this might have surprised Elise, I'm not sure. But so I said, when she asked me if I wanted to sing, I said, oh, I had this idea based on the experience I've been having coming to these piano karaoke nights, which is everyone here is like has such a great relationship with the music, and I've never had that. And I want to learn how that works. Huh. I want to, like, you know, go back to the music from when I was maybe 14, 15, 16, which would be like 1981, 84, something like this, and just learn to sing some of these songs, you know, and not care how they come out, but just see what kind of relationship with the music I can develop, because I'm so inspired by the people that are there doing the same thing. And then, so at that point, I didn't care about if I sang poorly or badly or off key or it was terrible. And like, and it says, like, let's do it. Let's break some stuff. And that was, so then I just started with that. And it was amazing. Like, for myself, I noticed, like, I wasn't self-conscious at that point.
Huh.
And like, ordinarily I would be like, and before I was like, sing, everyone else is doing it, I should do this.
Yeah.
And it was a good, I don't know, it probably was okay in places, but, you know, not, you know, No one was entertained. But now it's like, you know, this is something that I'm exploring, and I'm going to share it with the people that are there, because this is the kind of place where you can do it. So that was the
nice
experience there. You should come. You can just sit back and just kind of see what it's like.
And see
what, no one's going to make you sing. You know, you know, the only it's an interesting thing. And plus, you know, it's good to see you know, like our friends doing cool stuff like this, you know.
That's true.
So that was that.
Nice.
And let's see what else is going on.
Nice.
This week is, I've been doing this themed work week thing too. This is the second week.
Yeah.
Let me check the time here for a second. Yeah, we got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
See what I can do. So anyway, the idea is this. So the past year, I've been, I kind of have each day assigned to a different project.
Okay.
So the Monday is kind of podcast day.
Yeah.
So I do all the podcast blogging kind of stuff. Tuesdays is a day for a client. Wednesday is a day for another client. Thursday, Friday are these kind of overflow days, you know, for the work that's on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
And any other things that are going on. And the theory behind this was, like, if I have a daily focus for project to focus on, and I focus on, like, a realistic number of things to do, you know, like maybe at three really important things.
Yep.
And you know, one of them has to be the project I'm working on. Then another might be, like, some domestic thing that needs to be done, like doing laundry or, you know, something like this.
Yep.
You know, I've been trying to balance the amount of tasks that I have on any given day to reduce the amount of, you know, so I don't feel overwhelmed by, like, wanting to do the entire list at a time.
Yep.
Because this is impossible. It's not a good way of thinking about things. It just creates anxiety and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So I need to actually push a lot of things out of my mind. And, you know, in theory, the idea is good, but it turns out, like, over the past year, that it didn't really work that well because I was still overwhelmed with all the number of things to do.
Yeah.
And when I was doing one thing, I was worrying about the next thing I needed to do. And every time a meeting came along, I find meetings were incredibly disruptive.
Okay.
Any kind of social interaction at all.
Huh.
It just pushes everything out of my head.
Yeah.
There's this cartoon on the internet about programmers, about their forming all this complex state, and then someone comes up, hey, I sent you an email about that thing, and then they walk off and everything just goes away. And so they go, oh. And when I'm talking about the kind of projects that I'm doing, that's the kind of thinking I need to do. I need to, like, it takes me a long time to rebuild everything, a couple of hours to get to the point where I'm seeing everything clear enough to say, all right, I need to write this code module using an algorithm like this. It's going to take me, I don't know how long to make this, but let me put it step by step by step, fit it in there and make sure that it works. And then let me test it and let me make sure it's backed up and stuff.
Good.
But no, it's not enough time. It takes me basically half of a day to ramp up. One meeting, it's gone. So I'm going to themed work weeks. And the idea is, like, I'm going to take a whole week, a whole luxurious week, and assign it to a single complex project.
Huh.
I'll still get the other things done, but when I'm done with those things, I come back to the place where I'm at.
Yeah.
The theory being that maybe this will be easier. Maybe this is the right way to do it. I don't know. It's an experiment. Writing about it this week on the blog. We'll see how it goes.
Good.
This week is going to be... Last week was blogging week.
Did you get a bunch of blog posts done?
I got a bunch of blog posts done, but I didn't get the hard stuff done, which is the technical stuff that I need to launch the website, the new website. But I improved some processes. I left some good notes, so I think I can pick it up next time I get the time on this.
Yep.
This week is a client week, so it'll be interesting to just see how that goes.
Huh. Good. Good. What's the ETA on your new website?
There isn't one.
No.
I was hoping to launch it last week, but... I have a list of key critical tasks. Technically, if I get that one done, it could be maybe in the next month or so. Next time the blog week comes around.
Yeah.
Blogging for me is really easy. I can just, like, write up a crap storm of words.
Yeah,
editing them takes maybe a little bit of time, which I often skip. the proofreading part. They're better when I do proofread, so I'm trying to do that more, especially after talking to Teresa Santosky.
Yeah.
I'm always, like, very meticulous about that. I feel like a schlub when I don't do it. So that's me this week. We'll see. Hopefully soon.
That's good. And
I'm
trying
not to touch it.
You helped me put up my website, which is up finally. You helped me the last couple of months.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So we'll drop in a link for that and you can see it. And we got to wrap it up. So that'll do it for this week. Until next week, this is Photographer Sid Caesar.
And designer Dave Say.
And we will see you all later.
Music provided by
Michael Bellar and the Aziz Ensemble. Visit him at michaelbellar.com. Give him your love. Go buy his new album.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have a new intro soon with one of his new songs.
Yeah.
To help push the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Here we go. Ready? Hey! Excellent. Have a good week, everybody. We will see you next time.
Bye.